Hey, Brian, how you doing?
Hey, I tried answering your call, and for some reason it disconnected.
I was just showing Brian here. Check this out, Brian, real quick.
Live feeder?
Yes. Todd Kinnett, who spoke on Keith's thing, his Facebook page says Todd Kinnett wife beater on it. That's who he is.
Oh, sorry to laugh, but
this is Keith's evidence right here.
How do you spell his name? I want to see that.
K-Y-N-E-T-T. So if you type in Todd Kinnett, there's no other page. He doesn't have his own page. I don't know who put this up. Maybe it's him put it up. Didn't I tell you that I remember this guy used to beat his wife all the time? And I went on there last night and looked that up, and that's what it says, Todd Kinnett, wife beater. Yeah, K-Y-N-E-T-T.
Maybe his wife put that page up for him.
Yeah. I hate that I'm going to end up probably having to defend some of this.
Audio from my site?
Yeah, Kelly recorded it himself just so he had it. Because they're all starting to ask me now, what are you going to do about this? And I'm like, I can either just let it die on the vine, or I can call the feds and have him arrested for violation of Title 18, Section 112. Under the law of nations, he's assaulted the dignity of the state. He can't tell people that I got recognition from the Supreme Court and then turn around and tell people that's not recognition.
Right.
I started to do this in 2015 to a guy named Joe Cordiano. He was telling people that I got arrested by the feds for running a Ponzi scheme and I had to pay back $55 million. I said, I would have liked to have seen $55 million.
Right.
I'm like, where do these people get this information from? They just pull shit out of the air. But I've already done an international notice of name change. I already have recognition in the new name. So what? It was a rite of passage for me. I actually went to the court and they asked me my name, state my name for the record at Russell's trial. And it was just a weird moment for me. I mean, I had just knelt down in front of the courthouse before I walked in and I just said, Yahweh, give me the words I'm going to say because I have no clue what they're up to here today. And I didn't. They told me they were going to ask me four questions. They grilled me for 2 hours on the witness stand, trying to get me to slip up and say something that would perjure myself or get me to a point where they could prosecute me.
And well, you noticed on that recording from last night that one guy spoke up and he says, let me figure out this name situation. He's got William, David, Parker, Brian, who's who here? And in the write-up, the way he listed things, he listed you as William David Parker. And I'm looking at this stuff and I'm going, I know why he's doing what he's doing. He's twisting the entity's names around. That way he thinks that he can be safe from anybody coming after him and charging him with anything.
Well, I got news for him. I have case law going back to 1784 for doing what he's just done. This is in Philadelphia. A guy assaulted and offended a French. Somebody was part of a delegation from France that was in Philadelphia. So this was after the Treaty of Paris and all of that. And this would have been a loyalist or a British subject. And I think the judge's name is Oyer, O-Y-E-R, or something like that. I'd have to go back and look at the specifics of the case. They tried him specifically for violation of the Law of Nations, for insulting the dignity of France and that dignitary. And that guy was not an ambassador. He was some sort of legate or something. He got 2 years in prison, and after he got out, he had to post a bond for 7 years. I mean, you're talking about a time where you wouldn't even think that they're already ruling on the Law of Nations yet. And everything they were doing was straight down the Law of Nations. I mean, I don't have the full case. I just have reference to the case, but I know what the particulars are, why he got arrested, and why he went to prison. And the ruling was for violation of the Law of Nations. They put him in jail for 2 years.
Yeah, last night, I'm sure you heard on the recording.
I cannot listen to him. That man's voice grinds me to no end because he's so condescending and arrogant that to listen to him for any length of time, it turns my stomach to listen to him.
Like nails on a chalkboard.
It is. Anyway, it seriously is. And this is before even this started. Just to listen to the condescending way he speaks of the United States of America and the government that's in existence today. And he wants to claim he's not a sovereign citizen. And I'm like, well, see, your problem, Keith, is you want to sit here and pick at words. They lump everybody into the category of sovereign citizen who comes out and makes the claim that the government of the United States is illegitimate. And you claim that the government's illegitimate. And I got news for you. I got 400 million people here that I could go interview. They would disagree. So whether you think it's illegitimate or not, they don't care.
He claimed last night that you're guilty of international crimes.
I heard that part.
Yeah. I'm thinking, okay, you just made that statement. What crimes?
That's the whole point. He never says anything specific. I have violated the law of nations. And that's what Brian said here. He said, every time you say something, you quote it chapter and verse. He never quotes anything. And this whole thing about going to my island, I have the right of embassy. And if you'll go to book number 2, section 125 through 135, you will find out that foreigners have the right of permanent residency in other countries.
Yeah.
So what is he going to do? If he's pissed off about me being here, why don't he send Trump a freaking notice and tell him to get all the damn illegal Mexicans out of here? Yeah, I don't know who he thinks he is. See, that's my whole thing. I got to watch men go to prison and sit in prison for 3.5 years with no trial. Dario Bush sat in prison for 6 months with no arraignment. The only reason he didn't get convicted and go to prison was because he happened to be a Bolivian national. And when Bolivia started doing their job and shining the light on the court and what the hell was going on, the U.S. stepped down and fixed it because Missouri was screwing it up bad. But I told Dario when he called me, when he said he was being charged with meth crimes or whatever, I said, Dario, if you're a U.S. citizen, I can't help you at all, buddy. I said, I'm not interfering with the internal politics of that crap. And he said, I'm not a U.S. citizen. I'm married a U.S. citizen, but I'm a Bolivian national. And then he got mad when he had to take the diversion agreement and got 18 months. He said, I'm still not guilty of this. I said, Dario, that's a peace offering for the 18 months. They're dropping all the rest of the charges. He said, but I didn't commit this crime. I said, yes, but you violated the law of nations and you violated a direct treaty with Bolivia that goes back to 1855. I said, I've done the research. You violated Article 13 where it says they're going to grant each other special disposition in the courts or whatever for each other's nationals while they're on the territory of the other one. I said, but it says the nationals cannot become involved in political questions, and you got a website up that's so politically questionable, I can't even tell you. You're telling people that they can go to get UCC and the government's going to just pay millions of dollars in their bills. You're telling them how full of shit America is. I'm like, I mean, and from their standpoint, you're a Bolivian national, and their attitude is if you don't like it here, you get your ass back to Bolivia. I said, so you're going to take that 18 months as a peace offering. Even then, they didn't even limit him to Missouri. He had to check in once per month with the probation officer, and he could call from anywhere in the United States. They didn't even limit his travel to Missouri. I mean, he was calling in, didn't have to show up, nothing. He called him from Ohio. He called him from Washington State, wherever he traveled to. And it was an 18-month suspended probation. All charges were dropped. He was looking at 30 to 60 years.
Right. Yeah, that was a sweetheart deal.
And I told him, I said, you're either taking that deal or they will push the issue into court, whether you're innocent or not, but you will be in court for the next 5 years, and they will wear your ass out until you are nothing. I said, you will not have a life when they're done with you. I said, but you're not going to win the battle. You're going to lose the battle. So you either take the peace offering. And I was like, he had an attorney that got appointed to him because he had fired the other public defender for incompetence, and he proved to the judge that the guy was incompetent, which he did a good job with that. I mean, I was very impressed with him on that one. I'm like, wow, you actually stood up in court and objected to having that a public defender? And he said, well, he filed a memorial into the case or filed something in there, and even the U.S. Prosecutor said, Judge, this is, you know, inaccurate. So Dario said, I'm going to fire this guy. And he said, well, the judge was like, well, I still think he's a good attorney. He can do this. He can do that. And Dario went, your own prosecutor over here just said that this guy is incompetent. I'm firing him. And the judge went, okay, he's fired. And I'm like, see, they're going to test you. It was a test. Will you take that idiot or not? And then he got appointed this guy named, I can't remember his first name right off the bat. It'll come to me. So when he first met with him, and this is after I had gone to meet with the attaché up there. So the attaché flew to St. Louis, wherever they were, when they remanded up the district court, because he was in Missouri, and they remanded it to the federal court. And Dario went to the meeting, and Menacho, the legal attaché from Bolivia, went with him, flew out there to be in the meeting. Even Menacho told me, he said, dude, I have gotten a huge lesson about law here in the U.S. just by watching that guy. It was really interesting. He said, well, so where did you get this public defender from? I mean, did they just, you know, they assigned it as soon as you got to the federal court? He said, well, according to DeGrasso, he told me when I walked in, he said, Dario, we got to do this quick. He said, because I don't have a lot of time. He said, my schedule was really busy, but the judges called me into this and wanted me to handle it. And when he told me that, I said, wait a minute. You just said that the judge called him? He said, well, that's what he told me. I said, Dario.
They don't do that.
Judges do not call public defenders. I said, this guy's a specialist. I said, judges don't do that. That's the job of the clerks. I said, well, what did he ask you, Dario? What'd y'all talk about? He said, well, the first thing he did was he kicked his feet back and he looked at me and he said, Dario, what do you want? And Dario said, because he'd been listening to me, Dario looked at him and said, I want peace. And he said, Dario, I can give you peace. He said, I've already got this deal worked out with the prosecutor, and here's the deal. Boom, ba, boom, ba, boom, boom, boom. He already had the diversion agreement done. I had never even heard of a diversion agreement. Didn't even know what it was. It was back in 2010. And I was looking at it going, wow. And I've recommended people since then to go for diversion agreements over certain stuff that they've done. I had one guy who was trying to fight his mortgage foreclosure, and they ended up planting weapons on him and all kinds of shit because they got tired of his crap. He heard me on a Sarah show, and he said, what do you think I need to do? I said, I don't really know what you need to do. I said, but you're not going to get away from that arrest warrant. They will come and arrest you. He said, well, I'm not in the state right now. I said, then they'll arrest you and extradite you. So what? Where do you think you're going? I said, you're going to go back to wherever that mortgage on that house is. He said, well, so-and-so says I need to fight this and fight this or whatever. I said, dude, you told me they took a gun safe out of your house. He said, well, I didn't have any guns in it. He said, I just had gold in it. I said, no, you didn't. You had guns in it. He said, no, I didn't. I didn't have any guns in it. I said, yes, you did. Believe me, you had guns in that safe. You wait till you get to court on it. You had guns in the safe. Believe me. Unless you got some videotape that can prove that you didn't. I said, man, you have no clue what you're dealing with here. You had guns in the safe. He said, no, I only had the gold. I said, no, you didn't have any gold. That's their gold now. You had no gold in that safe. You had guns in there. You're a terrorist. I said, trust me, you're going to prison. I said, you have no evidence. It's your word against theirs. You're going to prison. I had thought about it for a day. I called him back. And he said, what do you think I need to do? I said, you need to sue yourself and the bank and the government for fraud and seek a diversion agreement. He said, what do you mean I need to sue myself? I said, did the bank come and put a gun at your head and make you sign that mortgage document? He said, no. I said, there's two elements of fraud in the mortgage document, and the bank doesn't sign it. You signed it. They said that you already owned the property when you didn't, and you'd already received the money when you hadn't. I know. I was in the real estate business. I know what a mortgage document says. I said, I used to ask the attorneys. I'm like, how is it that that mortgage document says I own the property here in fee simple, and that's what they're basing giving that money on, but after the closing, you guys go record the deed? I said, now that freaking deed's recorded, you don't own shit. So you're telling me you already received the money, which is a false receipt, which is worth 30 years in prison, and you're telling me you own that property, which is fraud. I said, the bank didn't go down there and make you sign that. You went down there and applied. He's like, well, they're the ones that drafted the contract. I said, who signed it at the bottom? If you're the last signature on the page, you take responsibility for every word above it. And he's sitting here thinking, and I'm like, they got you. This whole system is about got you. You have unclean hands when you signed that mortgage. Partners in crime can't sue each other in equity. I said, the best thing you can do is sue yourself and sue them and beg the court that everybody forgives everybody in this and that you walk away with a diversion agreement and agree that you will comply with any order of the court that relates to any sort of dropping all charges in this, giving them the house. I said, you're trying to say the mortgage is fraud. Great, the mortgage is fraud. That means if you keep it, it's unjust enrichment, so you're still guilty. You don't get the frickin' house. He's like, unjust enrichment. I said, what? You're supposed to be being a legal guy now? You haven't heard the term unjust enrichment? I said, shit, it's the first thing we learn in real estate. If you're licensed, you cannot use your superior knowledge to take advantage of somebody else because that will be considered unjust enrichment. And you could be prosecuted for that. If you're just an investor out here and you don't have the license, you can do whatever you want. You have the license. I know because I bought rental property myself and I was licensed. And I understood that I had to be very careful about going to auctions and doing things and not really taking advantage of someone. I won a case over that when I was married to little Sherry. Her daughter had that happen to her. Somebody bought her house and they were going to use it as a rental. And she had a condo and this was in Tampa. And she came back in at the last minute and she had a whole list of things that she wanted repaired. But she had gone past the contract provision, which says you got 20 days to have the property inspected. She did it 34 days later, and I was like, well, whatever her list there is invalid. she's outside the contract, but she worked for a title company. I went, oh, so she's a specialist in real estate. Oh, so
that's
now
she knows this stuff.
Right. So she's now trying to use her superior knowledge to take advantage of you. And I drafted it up into like a 13-page thing of every violation. And Elisa submitted that to the attorney before they went to closing. And the day of the final inspection, that woman walked in, man, you could see the scowl on her face like she was royally pissed. But it saved Elisa something like $4,500 in repairs. Because the repairs were illegitimate anyway. The only thing that was really wrong was, and she did replace it, the microwave that was above the range hood was bad, and that cost her $150. So the agreement was that she just replaced the microwave and that was it. You know, it came down to knowing the specifics of that matter. So anyway, the guy was like, you want me to sue myself? I'm like, well, you're guilty. I said, so what? I said, you as the man have moved the uppercase in commerce to take on a mortgage that you're now claiming is fraud, but you're the one that started it because they didn't coerce you to sign shit. I said, you wanted the house, and you're trying to tell me, well, you didn't have a meeting of the minds. I'm like, the day you signed it, you did have a meeting of the mind. If you freaking change your mind now, that's not their problem. If you have new information now, I said, that's why a statute called fraud. Fraud would never exist if people knew up front, because who would sign fraud if they knew it up front? He's like, well, that's not what these other people are telling me. I said, you want to get the respect of a judge? Then you take responsibility for your action and let the chips fall where they may. I told somebody about it, and they were like, man, I never heard of doing something like that. But he said, I can see where the court would take that as an act of honor. I was like, yeah. But see, we used to talk about that when I was with Russell and Wynn Miller and those guys. It's like, you know, we have not only do we have to sue them, we have to sue ourselves because we participated in it. Whether it was knowingly or unknowingly, we're still there. They still, you know, we have the, we can't, it's like Tim Madden said about one of the presentations I did about mortgages was banking partners in crime. He said, you know, if they put you on the witness stand about that mortgage document, they say, at the time that you signed this, did you own the property? No. At the time you signed this, had you already received the funds? No. And if you want to plead ignorance, well, that's too bad. You can't. You had the time to read the document. You had an attorney sitting there who could have advised you. All you had to do is say, why am I signing this document when I don't own this property yet? See, it's like it's already a gotcha. They're already there. Anyway. Well, apparently, according to what Brian's telling me, he accused you of treason.
Yeah, I guess.
I see that one of your guys on your website is claiming that that he sent in money that he never got his paperwork for. So now I've got two of those guys, and he's basically saying that he stole his money.
Yeah, I've heard people claim that. Here 2 weeks ago, actually, he went over that in one of the meetings, and he showed, like, the emails going back and forth between the people,
mm-hmm.
and he shows where they never even accepted the money from these guys. And myself, I think it's pretty stupid to be sending money in for documents or whatever from people that proven to do anything anyway. So,
well, I have one guy that did it. He said as soon as he complained and said, look, what's this grant deed thing here? And they're saying, he's saying, you want my Social Security number? And he said, well, it's not a Social Security number. And he said, well, what number is it? He said, it says XXX-XXX-XXXX. Looks like a Social Security number to me. He said, but you're wanting me to sign this without restriction or reservation? And he sent it to me. And he said, once he did that, they started accusing him of being an agent for provocateur and all kinds of crap.
That's his modus operandi. He always just goes on the attack.
I know why he's attacking me, because I put something in the group about the fact that he's using this naturalization of aliens to say we went down to take an oath. And he's completely avoiding the law of nations over the natural born citizen issue, which has been in the law of nations for 2,500 years. They didn't take oaths back then. 99% of people didn't even read and write. And he says, well, it has to be an act of association. I said, well, I have an act of association. All the Grand Council of the Indian Tribes sit around inside the teepee and smoke the peace pipe. That's an act of association. There's nothing in the law of nations that says thou shalt sign an oath. Otherwise, thou art nothing. Thou art stateless. That's all bullshit.
I understand the life follows that of your father.
It's as clear as a bell. As soon as Brian over there heard it, he said, what does he not read there? It says that you follow the condition of your fathers. whatever that condition is. And I met with Dr. Painter this morning because we got to go to the warehouse tomorrow and load up a van. He's going to South Carolina. Dr. Painter used to be on the Grand Council for the Yamasee tribe because he's part Indian, and the Yamasee are down here in Florida. But at one point in time, one of the tribal judges, and like one of their people got arrested in New Orleans and was held for 3 weeks, and he had to make a phone call over there, and they arrested him for vagrancy, but they arrested him like when he got off the bus. It's been years and years ago. He said he had like $300 or $400 in cash on him. So they're trying to find out where he's at, and he finds out he's in jail, just sitting there for 3 weeks, but wasn't even charged with anything. They were just holding him for vagrancy. He said the sheriff started hemming and hawing, and he said, excuse me, I am the tribal judge here for the Yamasee, and if he's not released immediately, I will be calling the feds to come have a conversation with you. He said they took him out of the jail cell and put him on a bus and paid for the ticket. I said, well, did they give him his money back?
Right.
I said, because I know people who have been arrested in Tennessee or detained in Tennessee who were sitting there with $2,500 in cash in the seat. The cops took the cash and didn't even write them up, just let them go. And they called me and asked me what to do about it. I said, what do you mean what to do about it? He just took your money. I said, wait a minute. No, he didn't take anything. You didn't have any money. What do you mean I didn't have any money? I had $2,500. I said, you got some proof that he took it? You got some proof that you had $2,500 in cash sitting in the front seat of the car? I said, these are just human beings. I don't know what to tell you. They're human beings. So Painter's telling me this morning they had a bunch of flooding up in North Dakota. So he says, well, the only thing that we have here that I can load up on the van is going to be some food supplies and water and some blankets and stuff. He said, so, you know, we want to load this up tomorrow. I said, well, I'll come over there and join you at 10.
That reminds me of something. I can't believe I forgot it. I got a phone call several hours ago. Well, not a phone call, but a text message from Johnny Rill, who is supposed to be part of their PAGs across America, Privateering Generals across America, and a quote-unquote legal department for Keith's government. And he said to me, he said that maybe some changes are going to need to be made and stuff, which I'm already planning on doing that. But he said that he himself is really sick right now, and he thinks he may have to step down from whatever he's doing in the government, and they're going to have to find somebody else to replace him. Go, oh, what's going on? Is he even starting to see what's really happening? Not want to be a part of it?
Brian said it last night, and it's unfortunate. And this is why I get bothered about people not just joining together. I've already had so many detractors come at me anyway, and they just end up going away. They're like here, it's like a blip on the radar and gone. I've been around longer than Keith has. I started this in 1999, and it took me 6 years to figure out that I had to have immunity and how to get it. And I had to join with something that, regardless of the negative information, I looked at the treaties that they had with Cameroon and the different ones, and I'm like, this is recognition right here. I mean, Richard McDonald was showing me the paperwork, and this was not even done by Richard McDonald. That was done before he ever came on the scene. And McDonald didn't do anything but screw stuff up. And that's because he was running around trying to be president of the Dom and run and teach this state citizen sovereignty shit at the same time, which is what got my buddy Dan Benham put in prison for like 6 years. Because I told him, I said, you keep listening to McDonald, dude, you're going to jail. I said, he even gave me a stand down order. When I went to court in 2006 and I had to testify at Russell, I said, well, I'm taking my Dom passport and stuff in there. He said, you can't do that. We don't have de jure recognition from the U.S. I said, what do you mean de jure recognition? You got freaking treaties and stuff. What are you talking about? I said, this de jure de facto shit doesn't matter. Go read the damn treaty. It says once recognition is extended, it can't be withdrawn. It doesn't say de jure, de facto, or nothing. It's just recognition. And so I didn't. I didn't use my U.S. ID. And this was the reason they did it to me, because I was sitting the fence. And they made me get off the fence. Sherry wanted me to do an offer and compromise with the IRS. I was like, are you kidding me? Offer and compromise? I sued them twice, once at the Supreme Court. There is no compromise. The agent looked at me and said, they only send me in when there's no negotiations left. So it means I have to do what's right. And what's right is not going to be to go on the wrong side of the fence. She's like, well, if you do this, something could happen and we won't see each other again. I said, if I go be a U.S. citizen again, I ain't paid taxes in 14 years. Are you kidding me? You're never going to see me again anyway. I'm like, I'm going to jail if they don't kill me for tuck and tail and running. So when McDonald told me that, I was like livid. And then I got in touch. See, I've been talking to Arthur Alexander, who wrote the Blue Book of the Sea. And I found out now the sea was the sovereign Earth Alliance. He actually knew more than everybody else, way more. He'd been in the government of Kansas. He was with Montana Freeman. But he spent 5 years in jail because of his association with the Freeman. He had walked away from them even a year before, but they still came after him. He was one of the ringleaders writing papers. And that's when he told me, he said, I figured when I was in prison that, you know, maybe I'll just start looking at where I'm wrong instead of where I'm right all the time. I said, well, I've already been down that path. That's the reason I'm here with you, because I read your book and I know that you know more than what I'm dealing with here with the Dom. Arthur and I have become friends, although he was an ass. God, that guy was one of the more arrogant ass. That's what everybody's getting upset about with Keith. That's like Brian was sitting there going, he said, I can't listen to that guy. He's the most arrogant, condescending person I've ever met. I said, well, I found one that was better than him. I said, but I don't hear from him. I don't know where he's at anymore. He literally started calling himself the Messiah. Okay. And when I found out he did that, I was like, I quit. And as soon as I quit, everybody else quit, because they couldn't stand him. I was like the interface between him and everybody else.
That's just the next step for Keith.
Oh, to call himself the Messiah?
Yeah.
I don't get it. I got a friend of mine that's in Philippines right now, and I look at some of this stuff, and it's like sometimes I just like, I already, you know, if we get our deal done over there, I'm going to go to Philippines to see about working with that, with the tribe over there, because he's talking to the Bang Zamora tribe, and the Bang Zamora are going to be given their autonomy by the Filipino government. They'll still be under, you know, the national government, but they'll have their autonomy. They do this in a lot of countries, especially like Ghana, where those tribal chiefs, they may still be under the national government, but they have a lot of freaking power because their elections are actually democratic. There's no electoral college shit going on. And so when those tribal chiefs, if one of those national governors or something pissed them off, you can forget the entire damn tribe voting for them. So they've already struck up a deal, and some of the people in the tribe didn't like it, so they actually started a bunch of chaos and started killing off some Christians, and Duterte responded by bombing the shit out of them. So Rich is talking to him, and he's saying, look, you need somebody like him, me, to come in there so he can teach you how to do this properly so that you don't violate the peace and get your all of you killed over here. But he's in the mountains right now, and he's living among these people. He's been there for like 8 weeks. And they had a mudslide, so he can't get back down to Davao right now. And I haven't been able to talk to him. He can't hardly ever get through to me because it's rainy season. It's raining all the time over there. So I talked to him last week. I said, well, when y'all going to get the mudslide cleared out so you can get out of there? He said, well, you have to understand, they're never in a hurry around here. I'm like, yeah, I remember when I lived in St. Kitts, they were never in a hurry either. I said, well, how are you doing? He said, well, physically I'm all right, but mentally I'm about to go crazy. I said, I don't care if you go crazy or not. I said, I just want to know you're physically okay. And so he just laughed, and I said, well, how long do you think it's going to get out of there? He said, that could be another week or two. I said, well, how does the tribe do? I mean, you're like in a place where there's no stores, there's no Walmart, they're not going to get groceries. He said, they grow all their own food and everything here. They got chickens, they got pigs, they got deer, they got, you know, they do whatever. He said, you have to understand, he said, the reason that they are not in a hurry is because they're happy. And that's what I realized when I was in St. Kitts. Regardless of what their lifestyle was, it wasn't all traumatic like it is here in America. And those people were happier. Regardless of their economy is not all bustling and they have all the amenities of technology or whatever. And so when I was down there, I'm sure to tell anybody, when we lived in St. Kitts, it was the happiest time in her entire life. She used to tell people that. She said it was the happiest, most peaceful time of my entire life was living down there on that island and around those people. And they loved us. We were a minority, 3% white down there, 97% black.
Yeah, I'm about ready to head somewhere like that. Get rid of all this BS.
I look at my life and I go, we got the merchant services business that Brian and I run. I started that up 2 years ago, and, you know, we're ready to go into another expansion mode with that. Matter of fact, we did payroll today, and then this other stuff with Dr. Painter, and, you know, he's leaving to go to Haiti on the 14th, and he's going to be representing Dom. He's our honorary ambassador for education and aid. He already owns land down in Haiti. He said he's going to sell it we got two things that we have interest in. One, they've got a hospital that they closed down that they're not running. It was almost brand new facility because somehow or another the management couldn't handle it. And they want to see if we'll take it over because through his contacts with Doctors Without Borders and stuff, we may be able to get that place outfitted and run it. And then the other one is they got a building that they're going to give to us to do education out of. Now, and Dr. Painter has a Christian group here in Florida. They want something to do. And the building needs a new roof on it. It needs to have a little refurb or whatever. And he's already been talking to them. And they're like, yeah, we'll go down there and fix that building up for you. I'm like, awesome.
Right? There you go.
Like I said, I mean, they're wanting the education. And we now have the footprint laid of what we're doing in Liberia. So they can, you know, he'll be meeting with the Ministry of Interior and the Minister of Education when he goes so that we can talk about implementing the same, you know, we'll move IEPA Liberia into Haiti with that facility. So if it all works out, he's going to be gone for, I think, 6 days. I have no desire to go to Haiti, though. None whatsoever. DR, different story. And we've actually got a container of aid sitting in the warehouse to go to Dominican Republic right now. And has been put together by someone else out of Lake City. And they're paying for it. So I don't know, you know, I'm going to talk to him once they get it ready, you know, about what our involvement could possibly be with that. Because I may cough up a couple thousand dollars to help him with the shipping or something. And so that Dom's name gets put on the invoice. We get a lot of donated product. I mean, that's one of the reasons I decided to work with the 501. Because he's been doing this for 23 years. But he's been involved with Dom since 1998. He'll tell anybody. He said, if you go back to 1998, he said, I've been watching this for years and years and years. He said, until you came along, nobody was doing anything right. And everybody who seems to come to Dom does not want to help Dom. They're trying to find what they can get out of Dom. I'm going to let this issue die. I was looking at your Facebook page, though, and from my standpoint, and you can do what you want to with it, but if I end up going after Keith for this because of this defamation and his violations of Title 18, I mean, I would prefer that stuff not be up on Tactical Sovereignty. Most of the people that I see even listening, I mean, like even Kurt Kallenbach said, who even wants to listen to this shit? And Kurt's somebody who was listening to me back in 2011, and then he went off trying to do other things, and he ended up getting into a bunch of trouble, and he's got a bunch of videos out here that slam him. And, of course, then I was looking at Keith's thing. I see the Annabon Ritz is slamming him and going, well, this is interesting. Anna is slamming Keith. Keith slamming Anna. It's like, does this stuff never end?
Yeah, I plan on going into it this evening, stripping a few things out.
Well, nobody in Dom even knows anything about this yet, but they're all getting it. They're all getting it tonight. And then as a group, if they look at it and they decide that they want to support not just as an attack on me, but an attack on Dom, you know, it's like I said, I mean, people want to look at jurisdiction, and I'm like, Dom's jurisdiction is established. It's even written into the Secretary of State's website in the state of California. If California did it, that means all the rest of the states recognize it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel sorry for him. I don't know what, I mean, if he doesn't drive, if he can't, I mean, his life has gotten to be miserable. That's all I can say. His life must just be completely miserable.
And I think that's probably why we're seeing anger come out of him. And it's because of some seated misery that's already going on.
Well, I'm sorry for him. It gives him no excuse to attack everybody else.
Yep.
You know, especially the one, you know, that claim he made in there about, I need to support, you know, my countrymen. I'm like, I'm not your countryman, dude. On your own website, you told everybody that if they don't go down to the courthouse and they can't take an oath, they're stateless, they have no country. So how in the hell could anybody possibly be your countryman unless they sign your shit? Sorry, I'm not drinking that Kool-Aid.
Yeah. Well, let me know what comes out of your meeting this evening.
Oh, it'll be a couple of days. I'm just sending this out to everybody for them to take a listen to it whenever they get the time. I probably won't hear anything back on this until after the weekend. And even then, I'm in no hurry for it. I mean, I can wait 2 years to file this thing. He's laid this on the line. If the court will take the case, and the court took our cases even when we wrote Unity States of Our World, they took our cases. If they took the money, they took the case. And this time I actually have recognition from them. Back then, we didn't. And so they would kick it out for failure to state a claim, 12B6 ruling. It wasn't that we didn't have a claim. It's just they were saying we don't have jurisdiction in this matter.
Right.
Because why? Well, it looks like an international matter needed to take it to the world court. But the federal courts do rule on this kind of stuff, and they've done it in all kinds of cases where corporations and people that were even citizens or whatever suing a U.S. citizen in the federal courts under diversity of citizenship, would they'll take the case.
Do you have a copy of what he put in his newspaper?
Hang on one second. Hey, Brian, do you have a copy of Keith's newspaper?
Yeah.
Yeah. Does he publish it up on the website?
On the American Herald.
The American Herald, is that it?
Yep, he's got American Herald and Ring of Heavens.
Is that on there as well?
That's this one right here.
Rain of the Heaven Society Post, Equal Opportunity Newspaper. Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, I have it downloaded.
Oh, you already have that downloaded? Okay, we got it.
Okay, cool.
Well, the thing about putting it into court is, if I put it into court and it goes and they'll take the case, and I already know that they will, everything he said he'll have to prove. But he'll try to claim that the United States court ain't got no jurisdiction over him, all he wants. They've already proven that to him otherwise. Otherwise, you know, I read a document where it says that so-and-so back in 2010 got raided by 110 agents looking for weapons. And that's when he found out what he was doing was important. I'm like, they're not, it has nothing to do with being important. It has to do with you being labeled. If they were in there looking for something that they felt was important, they would take your documents. They wouldn't be looking for weapons. They're just looking for something to nail you on. So I don't know. I don't know why he's made it this long. Except that they're letting it go and seeing how many more people will follow him. But that's what they did with the Montana Freeman. That's what they did with Cash for Titles when I was involved in that. They did an audit on the books in 1996. They had been in business for 7 years. Then after they did an audit on the books and the feds left, they went out and said, hey, see, we got a clean bill of health. Hey, we got a clean bill of health. Look at us. Look at us. Look at us. So their investments went from $30 million to $300 million. Then, boom, well, that's enough money. Let's take that. So they actually gave them the ammunition to go out there and turn it into a bigger thing and then convict them for running a Ponzi scheme. I'm like, well, that was the setup to begin with. Didn't you realize that? Of course, we didn't until it happened. But I've watched it since then because that was my first lesson. And of course, what they did to Michael Goss, holding him for 15 months with no trial. They just kept putting it off every month. They kept deferring it one every month. They bring him in for a hearing. Then the public interest overrules the need for a speedy trial. Boom, 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 boom. That was it. They're back in the hole. Until finally they starved him down enough and he finally pled guilty. That was my...
All right, Brother Rob. I got a cruise here.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Brian. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Yeah, you have a blessed day. Thanks, David.
You too. Bye.